Kevin Mullen is joining us, Republican from Rutland County. Senator, thank you for joining us. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great, Mark.
Boy, I've been hearing, the theme of the morning I've been hearing this morning is everybody says there's this huge budget gap, but every tax that I raise, somebody's got an objection to it. Nobody seems to really have, I'm not hearing $112 million being solved with all the objections I'm hearing. What are you hearing?
What I'm hearing is a lot of different proposals to try to take more money out of the pockets of Vermonters, and nobody's being serious about trying to limit the expenditure side.
You really don't feel that?
I really don't. I mean, there's a lot of crying in this building about all these cuts. Okay, if you take a look at what the House passed, it's an increase of spending of 4.7%. AHS is 7.2% increase, and granted, we did have to add positions to DCF, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't have tried to find ways to take positions away from others. And why are we in the mess that we're in today? During the Douglas years, the Douglas administration vetoed a budget that was exceeding the growth rate of the state of Vermont, and the legislature overrode him. If we had gone back to that base and moved it forward, we would have solved the whole problem. And you take a look at the state of Vermont has been in this position before in the early 90s under the leadership of Howard Dean. Howard Dean told people, this is what you're going to do. You're going to live with this, and you come back with a budget, and that's what you're going to live within. But nobody's doing that today. Instead, they're painting this picture like they're, if you listen to what's being said, you would swear that there were actual decreases in spending going on here, but we're not. We're not decreasing spending. We're not right-sizing government. The House passed budget has 30-some-odd million in new revenues, 24 million in one-time spending. It's unsustainable. We'll be right back here again next year, and everybody will be bringing out their handkerchiefs to cry about the same issues.
All right, so give me a better idea here. What's a better way to go? Is there a big structural change that needs to be made? Is it just really all about cut, cut, cut? What is it?
I think what we need to do is say, what is government's core functions, and focus on that, and not just nickel and dime across the board, but put the resources into where we need to accomplish government's core missions and get that job done. And then say, we can't do everything. Government cannot do everything under the current environment. And the second side of that is we need to grow our economy. We had Tom Pelham in from Campaign for Vermont into Senate Finance earlier in the week. The basic message that he put forward is if we had the same percentage of higher income earners in the state of Vermont as our surrounding states, we would have $92 million more in revenue, and that wipes out this whole discussion about this $100 million. So we need to have a policy in place where people want to come create jobs, become part of the economy, and move us forward. Vermont's a great place to do business, and we've got to get that message out there.
Senate Finance seems to be going in a completely different direction than House Ways and Means. I know your chair is looking pretty actively at this idea of expanding the sales tax, including services. Is that going to get out there on the table? Is that going to be part of this negotiation at the end?
It could be. And it's too premature at this point to really say what's going to be there at the end. But I would hope that on the Senate side, we could make a firm statement and say that we're committed that we're not going to raise $1 of revenue unless we come up with a plan for the future on spending moving forward that keeps us sustainable. Because how could anybody in good conscience vote to put on the highest tax increase in recent Vermont history on Vermonters and not even have a plan to put us in a sustainable pattern going forward?
The House Education Committee, or the House now, has passed this bill increasing the size of school districts, capping spending. Is there anything in this education bill that you think will ultimately or today make any sort of difference?
I think so. I think anytime that you get neighboring districts and communities talking with each other, that there can be a path forward. And there are a number of situations in the state of Vermont where the current setup is not benefiting the kids in the school. Kids aren't going to be successful if they're in such a small school where they're not exposed to computers, they're not exposed to any foreign languages, they're not exposed to any arts. So the conversation has to be shifted away from protecting turf to doing what's right for the kids. And I think if we can get that conversation shifted in that direction, doing what's right to best educate our kids for the future, then I think we can come to some common frameworks and move forward and design a system that works in today's environment and not in the environment of the past.
You know, I'm thinking about Rutland County. You've got a big city with Rutland, and then you've got a lot of really other smaller communities. And I'm wondering, don't you worry with school consolidation that you wind up with communities that somebody that has kids might not find attractive to move to?
Well, you could even have a community that was a school choice community that didn't even have any schools, and that might be the most popular community in that area for someone to move into because they want to be able to have the choice of where their child goes to school. So I know that as a former school board member, we always felt that our obligation was to have the type of school that made people want to move to our town. Act 60 and 68 changed that dynamic. Our theory before that was we wanted to pay the most to have the best teachers. And now the problem is that everybody shares in that payment of those teachers. So I think it's a different world that we're living in today than one that we were living in two decades ago, and people haven't woken up to that.
I have not heard that argument, that could actually make a town more appealing. That's fascinating. The lake cleanup bill, the property transfer tax being eyeballed as a way to pay for it, and you're shaking your head.
The reality is this is the type of expenditure. What we need in the next year isn't even probably $10 million because they can't spend it and they can't get ready to do what's needed. So that $10 million ought to just be part of the budget. We shouldn't even be talking about a new revenue source to pay for this. I mean, if you want to talk about things that would create disincentives for people to pollute in those type of tax structures, maybe that makes sense. But to put on a broad-based tax on everyone in Vermont to pay for it, I don't think makes any sense.
The president of the Senate's talking about a per parcel fee. Is that any more palatable to you? That sounds more like what you're talking about than the property transfer tax being objectionable.
I think that both are objectionable.
So your idea would be to wait a year before you started trying to raise any money at all?
No, listen, I think that we could allocate funds that are in budgets today in A&R to doing this. And I think that we have to look at creating disincentives. We're not taxing fertilizers today. I mean, these are the type of things that would be a tax that would help to really change the external costs of things involved. You know, people should have disincentives for putting down the most recent dandelion killer on their lawn and things like that if they're in an area that's going to wash into a waterway. I mean, I don't think that we should be making it easier.
Mm-hmm. So ultimately, though, do you feel there needs to be raised money above and beyond what's in the budget now? Even a year or two from now? And if so,
I do think a year or two from now that definitely. I think, but this first year, even if we had the money, we couldn't spend it all. But we do have to have a plan to paying for the lake cleanup moving forward.
Okay. And what would that look like for you?
Again, it would be more targeting the actual polluters. It would mean taxing fertilizers. It would mean putting a tax on products that are used on people's lawns that are getting washed into our waterways. It would look at things like that rather than just saying we're going to create this new. Whenever you create something new, yes, I've heard Senator Starr say it's only $25.
Right.
So it's 50 cents a week is what his argument is. And the problem is once you create a per parcel tax in the state of Vermont, people are going to be coming forward next year with whatever their project is, and that's only going to be 50 cents a week. And they'll just keep trying to add to that. So we have to stop trying to create new broad-based taxes. It's the same reason why I oppose the governor's payroll tax. Because if you believe that it's not going to grow over time, then I have a bridge to sell you.
Mm-hmm. You have in the past worked pretty extensively on health care issues. Let's talk about that proposal to try to raise money. Is this Medicaid cost shift worth imposing this half-cent charge on half a cent per ounce, which is a lot more than half a penny on a bottle? Does that make sense?
No.
It's not worth getting at this Medicaid shift for that.
It's worth us addressing the Medicaid shift, and there's a way to do it that would be taxing the users of the system by looking at increased claims tax fees, increased employer assessment fees on employers over 50 that aren't providing insurance, and basically possibly taking a look at the cigarette tax, because the cigarettes cost our healthcare system a great deal of money over time. But to create this tax that's going to be very hard for stores to implement and create one more incentive for someone to go across our borders to buy products, I think is the wrong direction.
Would you have a problem extending the sales tax for candy and soda?
Probably not, and I would include bottled water.
Okay. How come?
Well,
why not, right?
Okay, why? Take a look at how much pollution plastic bottles are creating in this country. Most people don't even need bottled water. They can get it right out of the tap. And if you take a look at our neighbors, there's no real competitive disadvantage, because the state of New York, for example, is not only charging a sales tax on a bottle of water, but they're also charging a bottle deposit.
Thank you for your time this morning.
Thanks, Mark.
Kevin Mullen is a state senator from Rutland County. We'll take our final break here before we close up shop. Back after this.
Each and every day, we give you a lot of news and information.
Breaking news related to Hurricane Irene.
This whole bailout thing they did, the stock market's going to go.
Now, you talk about incentives, and is there a perverse incentive within our education?
That was Deputy Transportation Secretary Sue Minter.
It's a lot to digest. Join up with me, Artie Levine, for 2 hours of great music coming your way daily, Monday through Friday. The Getaway. It's 2 hours of music to help you escape. Only on WDEV, the stations of Radio Vermont.
Did you know that you can e-cycle your old electronics for free? There are new laws in Vermont designed to keep toxic electronics out of our landfills and make it easy to e-cycle. If you have old computers or monitors, peripherals like printers, scanners, or keyboards, even old televisions, you can drop them off at over 90 locations across the state. Find a location online at vtecycles.org or call 1-855-6-ECYCLE. It's absolutely free for all Vermont households, school districts, nonprofits, and small businesses with 10 or less employees. But remember, your privacy is your responsibility. Personal information should be completely removed from your hard drives before recycling them. For information about data destruction or to find a drop-off location, visit vtecycles.org or call 855-6-ECYCLE. It's easy to e-cycle.
All right, back at the State House, a couple of closing thoughts here before we wrap up. If you're looking for a great place to go for lunch today, make it our friends at Red Hen Cafe and Bakery, right off of Interstate 89, exit 9 in Middlesex. And right off the interstate there, no big adventure for you to be driving the back muddy roads of Middlesex. And, man, it's going to get nasty here in the next few days, isn't it? Or today, at least, with the really warm weather. So stop in and have yourself a fabulous lunch, because you don't have to worry about the mud. The only things that you'll see that are even related to that, maybe the mud pies, which I also call the whoopie pies there. Fabulous on a weekend. Stopping in soon. You can start your day at Red Hen Cafe and Bakery, and that starts at 7 a.m., 8 on Sundays. They close their doors at 6, so you could head on up there and pick up a few items for dinner, a couple of loaves of bread, perhaps go along with that fabulous soup you make. And they make fabulous soup at Red Hen Cafe and Bakery. Two soups available each and every day, and one of them is always a vegetarian special, one a meat special. All right, I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program. I want to thank you for joining us on the program as well today. Coming up Monday, I'll be back in the studios. We've got an interesting couple of guests coming our way next week. Next week, one of the big features next week, Wednesday, it's the Colby Military Writers Symposium down at Norwich. I'll be broadcasting live from there as we have now for just about a decade. So hope you can join us for that program. That'll be coming up Wednesday. Have a great weekend. Happy Easter to those of you that celebrate that. Come back and join us same time, same place, Monday. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren and AM 550 WDEV Waterbury Montpelier. News is right now.